Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Debbie Whitfield, Deputy Chair of New London Architecture, and delighted to be chairing this business sector briefing on London's creative industries. The significance of the sector to London as a global city is pretty clear. Research from the GLA Economics team values the industry at £35 billion. The sector provides some 800,000 jobs for the capital. London's position as a world leader in culture and creativity is obviously absolutely key to our role as a global city. And critically, the industry is growing by 3.9% every year, a fact made all the more significant in the context of the waning professional services, financial services sectors. In this briefing, we're going to focus in on the future of London's creative industries, the opportunities and challenges the sector's facing, and specifically how the property industry is responding to these trends. We've got a fantastic expert panel, which I'm delighted to introduce to you. To my left, we have Alex Orestis, Urban Design Director at Publica. We then have Jacob Loftus, CEO of General Projects, Scott Campbell, Director of Deloitte Ventures, and Emily Prido, Head of Leasing at Derwent London. We're going to start off with a presentation from Alex to really help set the scene with an overview of the sector's key trends and challenges. We'll then hear from each of our panellists in turn, open it up to a bit of a panel discussion, and then obviously we're very keen to hear from you as well, so please do be ready with some questions. So on that note, over to you, Alex.
Thanks, Debbie. Oh. I'm quite mic'd up. So I'm just going to try and be very, very quick, but kind of romp through some of the current ongoing research that we're doing at Publica, looking at the creative industries and their place in London, their value and influence on streets, neighbourhoods, buildings, and the city as a whole, actually from a cultural as well as from an economic perspective. We're doing that work with Mark Wada and the Store Studios and Vinyl Factory. So in about 10 minutes, I'm going to try and kind of give some overview of that research, looking both at the geographical spread of the creative industries in London, but also some of the other headlines and provocations, I suppose, for the panel discussion. So it might be worth starting, I suppose, with a very, very quick definition. It can be quite a nebulous term, the creative industries, but they are defined as those industries that have their origin in individual creativity, skill, and talent, which have a potential for wealth and job creation through the generation and exploitation of intellectual property. And within that very broad term, we actually have a whole range of services and businesses. We have advertising, the visual arts, the performing arts, marketing, architecture, craft, design, that's product design, graphic design, fashion, film, TV, video, radio, photography, IT, importantly growing, software, publishing, but also the museums, the galleries, libraries, and the music industry. A broader term beyond that is the creative economy, which actually covers, of course, all those people who have those kinds of jobs, but within other sectors, for example, finance. As Debbie's already highlighted, it's an incredibly important sector to the UK economy, and especially to London, with the Department of Culture, Media and Sports saying that 1 in 11 people are employed in the creative industries, and also that just in export terms, in 2014, it was over £19 billion. It's geographically spread across the country, but London really is its focus and its kind of wellspring, traditionally within the UK. And place, I suppose, does form an incredibly important part of where creative industries choose to locate themselves and where they want to grow, and of course where they're looking for property. Certain creative industries are geographically clustered, others are spread across the UK. But in 2013, London was also the most visited city in the world, which I'm sure a lot of us know, and 80% of the city's 18 million visitors named culture as a key driver for their visit, which of course stands on top of the amazing creative sector that we have in this city. This is a map that we've just been preparing that actually looks at number of creative employees across the boroughs and across the super output areas from census data. I think it's a really fascinating map because it shows actually the importance of the centre still very much to where employment and creative businesses and properties are clustered in London, but also some of those other hotspots, for example, out at White City, Hammersmith, and interestingly, of course, Canary Wharf, because there are a lot of people working in those kinds of professions within other sectors. But also, you can see, you know, the greener flush down at Deptford and increasing clusters in South London. If we zoom in a bit, this is a map that we've prepared, actually just looking at points of creative production. So these are art galleries, design studios, fashion design ateliers where things are being made and designed, music production studios, new media premises, and cultural institutions in the major venues. And I think that really just shows the clustering of the West End. So here we can see the West End, but the really, you know, well-emerging sector and cluster around Old Street, and of course, many, many others across the city. So as part of our research, we've been focusing quite a lot on the reuse of existing buildings by the creative industries, and we've focused on a couple of archetypes, I suppose, the first being the Central London West End mixed stock of historic buildings, newer buildings that offer a fine grain home for smaller creative industries and businesses traditionally in areas like Soho. We've been looking in detail at Denmark Street as an example of this, obviously somewhere that's undergoing a great amount of change currently. But this is just a list of actually all the many, many creative industries that are housed in all those buildings. So you can just see film, television features very highly, world-leading businesses there in small offices often, architecture studios, music is a big part of the history of that street. And really they all cluster within a selection of buildings that are built off the history of that part of London, but also all the other uses that one gets at street level. So you can almost start to see Denmark Street, if it was all put into one building, offering all the functions of co-working space, a cafe, places to meet and do business deals, but also the cultural and civic kind of bedrock of the centre of London. And all of that, of course, housed layer by layer in the buildings that we see in the centre of the city, from, for example, music venues in the basement through retail at ground floor, and then all the businesses and even residential mix in there on the floors above. All those histories create a multi-layered and well-connected central part of the city that actually, importantly, we see allows an adaptation over time, which I think is a lesson that we can all kind of begin to think about for perhaps new developments. And of course, Denmark Street also right in the midst, as I said, of massive redevelopment close by, with also many of the new tenants in those buildings being within the creative industries, importantly. But what does that mean for building new buildings, perhaps in the outer areas of London? Well, we've looked in detail at the Bussey Building, which some of you might know, out in Peckham. And that's a post-industrial site that includes an amazing array and mix of uses just within that one complex. So it was originally built actually as a cricket bat factory in the 19th century, but since 2007 has become an important landmark and really anchored the development and the emergence of Peckham as a creative neighbourhood and a place where people do business and are looking for property. It now houses an incredible evolving mix of businesses, venues, cultural, social and economic activity. And in fact, once again, it's kind of acting as a complex and as a campus almost within that part of town. Interestingly, it kind of emerged from a history of opposing some forms of development, which is perhaps interesting to think about. And one of its important aspects really is the mix of its collective identity, but also its programming throughout the days of the week, at the weekend as well, but also day, evening, and night. For example, there's churches there, gyms, yoga studios, recording studios, as well as many businesses. But it's also a place that points to some of the challenges in the development sector around creating space for the creative industries. Even as recently as 2015, one of the buildings fronting onto Peckham High Street was actually, Rye Lane, was actually earmarked for development into luxury housing, which was seen as a threat to some of the mix and some of the nightlife uses that are very important to that ecology of the creative industries at the back of the site. And actually that was opposed successfully in this case. The building's uses reflect the diverse neighbourhoods which surround it, both from young creative professionals and entrepreneurs starting new businesses that will eventually go on to occupy more and larger properties, through to the arts college students and the local African and Caribbean communities living nearby. Looking outside London, what are some of the risks and some of the competitors to the growth and the longevity of the creative industries in London? Well, I think the classic example at the moment that everyone seems to cite really is Berlin. So we've gone and looked at that city and to try and understand actually what's behind it, what's really in the DNA of that place that is attracting so many of the new generation of practitioners and new IT professionals, etc. We looked actually again at the reuse of buildings, because I suppose one of the real bedrock aspects of Berlin's property market and the reason it's got to where it is the reuse of all the existing space that was really underused following the fall of the Berlin Wall. A classic example of this is from the artist's atelier in a walk-up mixed-use building that's allowed, you know, somebody to locate their professional practice in Berlin, but also key into London art market from that European base. But then actually at the other end of the scale, really huge spaces such as the Chaos Collective here, which is slightly further out of the center of Berlin, which allows a scale of production that is actually quite challenging to find space for within London at the moment at kind of the costs that people are expecting as they start out on their careers especially. Another really, really big trend we saw in Berlin was the massive and very rapid increase in co-working space. So this is the example of Factory Berlin, which is a 1,000-member co-working space in the Mitte district, and that's attracting young entrepreneurs from across Europe and across the world who are seeking the Berlin lifestyle, which is built on that bedrock of the creative industries, but also a well-connected and well-serviced office space. There's many, many other examples, and I'm starting to run out of time, so I'll romp through them very quickly. But one interesting place, for example, is the new Axel Springer Media Center designed by OMA Architects. The architects themselves say this new building in Berlin will act both as a symbol and a tool in the shift from print to digital media, a building to where the elite of the digital bohemia will be attracted. There's also examples of Swiss pension fund working with nightclub operators to actually redevelop a whole area of the Spree riverside. And I suppose it is a bit of a warning, or perhaps an interesting provocation to us in London, as to where the next generation will be attracted to move to start those businesses or to seek employment by larger businesses. And I thought one really interesting recent story was the HSBC move up to Birmingham, and it being cited that it's actually been very difficult not to attract some of the finance staff to move, but actually some of those other support staff in the more creative sectors of marketing, media, etc. Another really interesting anecdote: at the moment, we're seeing GLA reporting that about 3,500 artists within London are at risk of losing their studio spaces. And of course, the bare facts of the cost of living and property being a massive influence on where people are choosing to move, set up business, and propagate the next generation of wealth creators and industry. Of course, in London, we're doing great things as well, so we shouldn't be too downcast. There's fantastic examples right in the center of town, actually, for example, 180 Strand, where buildings that have that fantastic connection and into the existing transport and other factors of the centre of London are being accommodated and attracting people from East London actually back into the West End. But even further out, some other really interesting examples I'm sure others will go into speak about. So I'm going to wrap up there.
Thanks, Alex. Right, so now moving to a high profile area of London not traditionally associated with creative uses. Jacob, what are you offering at One Poultry to attract creative occupiers?
Unfortunately, that's a harder question to answer, mainly because I don't really think there's kind of necessarily a formula that one can just inject into an office building to make what's traditionally been an unsexy part of London interesting to the creative industries. I think what's really interesting about this panel and the premise of it is the fact that the creative industries generally across London over the last 5 or 6 years have gone from being a far less focused component of tenant demand into kind of one of the burgeoning sectors who are really kind of driving a very big change across, you know, multiple neighbourhoods and villages across London. And you've seen, you know, the growth of Shoreditch, the South Bank, Clerkenwell and other areas all very much being driven by, you know, the tech, media, creative industries kind of actively growing there. The city's sort of been the one bastion holdout that actually hasn't really begun to really see any of that, you know, new London change happening within it, and hopefully, you know, our aspirations at One Poultry are to you know, be the first of what I expect will be, you know, many other different types of development coming forward in the city. I think in terms of what we're doing, I'll go into that in a moment, but I think it's important to recognise that, you know, part of the drivers behind where a lot of the creative and tech industries locate is very much driven by, you know, the amenity and the sorts of buildings and the environments that are provided in the places that they've been gravitating to in the past. And so just arbitrarily trying to do something interesting and creative in the city, you know, comes with a very big challenge to begin with. I think we're quite fortunate in as much as I see there being kind of three very unique circumstances that have all overlapped and somewhat, you know, fortuitously lined up the stars to give us a really interesting opportunity to do something very, very different with One Poultry. Firstly, it's a very unique building in its own right. It's the youngest Grade 2 star listed building in the UK. It had a huge history as a site, given its prominence on Bank Junction and the history of the Mies van der Rohe building that never was, and then, you know, the postmodernist icon that James Stirling created. And ironically, historically, one would have viewed that building in the middle of the city as actually being somewhat substandard for what the traditional city occupier wanted. Ultimately, the floor plate's a triangle with a circle through the middle, so it doesn't meet most of the traditional city conventions. But actually, the base building has got 4 meter slab to slabs, and actually you're never more than 6.5 meters away from a window wherever you are on the floor plate. So a lot of the right base build characteristics of volume, light, and a huge amount of James Stirling's character are all already injected in it. But the history of its occupation by Aviva, Boots, Austin Reed, and a Wetherspoons pub didn't quite project creativity. So we're fortunate in as much as we're starting with a very good base to work with. The city, although taking somewhat longer than perhaps Shoreditch and the South Bank to flourish in terms of creativity, is, I think, on the cusp of the first few very interesting changes. And ironically, because it's the last place people would have imagined, it's not really clustering around the Barbican. It seems to be happening just next to Bank Junction. So obviously, I'm sure most of you have already been to the Ned, which is the new Soho House hotel and restaurant in the old Midland Bank, just next door to One Poultry. And Norman Foster's amazing new HQ for Bloomberg that really will be the blueprint for, you know, how the future of work is going to be carried out for, you know, for big companies is just being finished on the other side of One Poultry. We're working on our aspirations to do something creative with our building, and then the whole of Bank Junction's actually now been pedestrianised by the City Corporation. So there's this really interesting kind of immediate cluster just around the centre of Bank Junction where actually some very different un-city things are happening. And that's very much kind of helped to make it the time for us to be doing something more creative than we might have. Likewise, you know, don't need to lecture this room because a lot of familiar faces and we're at the Creative Industries panel. But I think, you know, one of the biggest driving forces around how the world of work is changing generally is, you know, new technologies radically reshaping how and when people work. And actually, the office has moved away from being the place to need to sit quietly on your laptop and, you know, and do quiet work. You can do that anywhere. And as the office becomes, you know, more the place for collaborative working and, you know, working in teams and thinking creatively, the buildings become a much more important component of how a business and an organization runs. And I think that started with the creative industries, but the traditional corporate world is beginning to adopt that sentiment very much. And I think for us, to go back to the actual question that I was asked, the ethos of the project is to embrace, you know, the amazing iconic building that we've got and celebrate it and try and create a new product inside and a new brand within it that very much reflects Stirling's original vision of playfulness, creativity, and, you know, a much more imaginative way of working. We obviously want to maximise all of the amazing features that he originally designed and take advantage of the volume, the light and the character. We'll be doing all of the expected things of multiple bicycle racks and beautiful showers and great changing areas and fantastic coffees, all of which I don't think are any more the kind of key things that define a creative building. I think that's the benchmark standard for any building in London, and if you're not doing that, whether you're creative or not, you're going to struggle. I think the real thing that's driving us more than anything is how do we create a product for traditional corporate businesses, whether creative or financial and professional, that puts user experience for the individual first. And really everything that's being designed in the building, from your arrival into the service yard to park your bike or through the reception, what your experience is in the lift, depending on which playlist I've put on my Spotify that morning to program it. We want every part of the building to feel like it was really designed for each individual person and to make it a really interesting place for people to be working. And so, you know, a huge amount of the design is really being driven by, you know, the boutique hotel industry and looking at how we really create a product that we think is delivering, you know, user experience and service, even though ultimately, you know, General Projects as developer and Airmont Capital, the owners, we're not a co-working business. We're trying to lease to institutional grade creative or corporate tenants. We still want to create this similar sort of ethos of service and experience.
Great, thank you. So, moving on to tech, which has been mentioned a couple of times already. Scott, you invest in and work alongside sort of fast growth tech and creative businesses.
Yeah.
How important is location and working environments to the success of those businesses, and what do you think the industry could be doing to support them?
Yeah, so thank you, Debbie. And while I reflect on the embarrassment potential of people hearing what I'm listening to on Spotify in the lift, which sometimes I don't want to reveal. Afternoon, a pleasure to be here. I don't work in real estate, apologies for that. What I do is I work with fast-growing tech companies and established corporates. The most common call I get is disruption in technology is destroying my business model. What do I do about it? And that is actually brings me on to the definition of creativity. And I completely agree with the definition you had up there, but I don't necessarily agree with the traditional industries you put under that banner. I think more and more corporate, traditional corporate clients have to create. And that is being driven by the pace of change of technology. It's terrifying, absolutely terrifying. The sky is falling, as some people will have you believe, and the real estate industry itself is under challenge. Industries now fall off cliffs. And one way to respond to that is to be more agile and to be place more bets on the edge of your business. Now, you're seeing a trend of that in the market. People moving to Shoreditch, big corporates, to try and find creativity. Lo and behold, that doesn't necessarily work. Now, you then have to figure out, well, how do I employ the right talent? I think you may have heard from Angus Knowles Cullough this morning about that's a massive challenge for London. Do we attract the right talent? But what I'll come back to the point of place and workplace for creativity, because there are clusters in the world. Silicon Valley, Tel Aviv, Berlin, London, significant cluster. Sweden is on the rise. Watch out for that. Rotterdam, for some unknown reason, is often highlighted as a cluster. And what those clusters have are excellent facilities, excellent ecosystems, if you'll allow me that buzzword, and access to talent. And it is a much broader responsibility than just having a creative type building. It's what's around it. Who do you have there? The clients that I talk to, the corporate clients, they say, where do I find the answer? How do I come up with the answer? You can't dream it up. You can't write a PowerPoint presentation that says, here's what you need to build. You need to discover it. And discovery only comes from being in an ecosystem which is creative. I had the great pleasure of actually working with Derwin on our new studio. Never did I think that a legacy accounting business would have a studio. And I'm not quite comfortable with the thought of creative accountants. But we're moving towards that in a positive way rather than a negative way. We did that. And that has totally transformed the culture and talent we attract. I was a skeptic about what spaces and ecosystems can do for a business 5 years ago. It's completely transformed what we do. It attracts the right sort of talent. I'm sometimes surprised at the talent we recruit now. It has changed our culture, and it means our clients are willing to engage with us in a different way. So what does space and ecosystems do for creativity? It is astounding. Now, what can the industry do to respond? I think recognizing the challenge that your tenants and corporate clients face, it's terrifying. We've moved from a world of scarcity, where we used to have office spaces that manage knowledge, data in a scarce way, to a world of abundance, where four guys in a garage can tack on to the data that is out there and destroy the business model of the great corporate. So recognizing that challenge and helping them on that, they need agility to scale businesses up and down. Their property footprints are probably some of the most expensive things they hold, and they make a lot of terrible business strategic decisions based on that. So understanding their problem and how you might react. So the second point is how you react to that. You're going to have to innovate the commercial proposition. Otherwise, corporate clients and tenants will turn to the people that do. WeWork, a great example of that. They give agility. We've just taken a new second space in a WeWork around London where we house some of the companies we're building and some of the companies we fund. I walk the corridors there now and it's littered with corporate clients, partially because it is quite expensive and the corporate clients do drive the price up. But they're moving to those agility models. And then the third point I'd say to you guys is understand how your business is going to be disrupted by technology. To offer commercially differential propositions, you're going to have to innovate yourselves. So the three things I'd labour to the room is it's absolutely critical to attract a creative industry for all business, because that's where growth will come from. London is very lucky to be a capital of that. Understand the problem. It is not something that they're being difficult about driving down prices or leases. They need to be agile. Know how you reflect that and know how innovation is going to drive that. So just three things to reflect on as you progress into this disastrous world where businesses go disrupt. It's not all the sky's falling just yet. Don't worry.
Thanks, Scott. So now turning to Emily, what requirements are you seeing from your creative tenants, and how is that affecting your approach at Derwent to leasing and development generally?
I mean, a lot of what I'm going to say is completely reiterating what we've already heard. And I would probably start by saying, in spite of the subject matter of this panel, creative industries, exactly what Jacob and Scott have already said, is that it's really becoming less and less about creative industries now. Across all sectors, all sectors need to show themselves as being creative. If they're not being creative, then they'll be falling behind in their own industries. So what we're seeing, obviously, I'm talking about now really occupiers and what they're requiring from us. And that's not necessarily the creatives, but it's how they're viewing their space. Overall, I think it's probably fair to say that they are becoming more demanding and expecting more from us landlords, developers, rightly. And as Scott says, we have to absolutely embrace that and listen to what they need. It's certainly becoming more of a... Real estate's becoming seen as a service provider as well as a physical asset. So how we tackle that is absolutely paramount in what we're doing. And it's more often than not now intrinsically linked, again, to what we've all touched on here, to talent. How they can attract, retain talent, you know, that is a business's biggest asset, most important asset. And the space that they sit in matters. And occupiers at decision-maker level are fully aware of that today. There's probably three points to touch on that we're seeing consistently, which really are flexibility, and that's flexibility in respect of the lease contract, what they need, that agility that they need, and that enables them to contract, expand over a short to medium term, not the traditional 10 to 15 year term, but also flexibility in terms of the physical space. You know, occupiers want to be able to change sometimes significant proportions, and I know the guys in Buckley Building is a case in point, over a weekend and come in on a Monday to something that looks very different for some specific project or something of that sort of thing. And then obviously it is the talent and what that means for people. And I think it's, you know, we all talk about the millennials and that's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, but it's more about what people on the ground expect from their office space. And it's no longer just the place to go and sit at your desk and get your head down and work. It's the social element of that. It's where they're going to have those natural collisions. It's where they're going to meet talent, whether within their own business or another business. They're going to want to swap talent. They want to be in an environment where there is life, where there is amenity. All of those things which matter in the context of keeping them productive and keeping them happy.
Fantastic, thank you. We are going to open up to questions from the floor shortly because we're running slightly over time, but I will try and kick things off by putting a couple of questions to the panel. We've obviously heard about the emergence of other cities, both internationally and here in the UK, that are potentially competing for London's creative young talent. Some of those closer to home than others. Margate, for example, not really very far away, and actually creating a proposition that's really quite compelling for a lot of young people. What can we be doing as a city to protect that, guard against that movement? Alex, do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, I think Margate's actually a fascinating example because it really shows, a bit like Berlin, where there was a massive transport change there. You know, when the high-speed rail line went in, and I think when some of the investment that went into the renewal there, it sparked off and it kind of gave fertilizer to things that were already nascent. And it's an example, I think, of somewhere where the kind of the lower level kind of non-corporates are really attracted to. But that's where to keep your eye on for the next generation of people who are building business, and also eventually where people will want to live, want to work, want to spend their days. I think if we bring it back to London, I would just agree with most of all those comments just now. I mean, I think one of the things is obviously it's about cost and it's about connectivity. I think what the risk we have at the moment in London is the slack space in the centre is now so limited, or it appears to be so limited, that people are kind of facing choices in the smaller and emerging sectors as to, do I move further out of the centre, or does that almost put me into the league of, well, I might as well move to Margate, I might as well move to somewhere else, because actually the time and the effort it takes to get to meetings or to hold events or to access markets is roughly the same. So I think a lesson that maybe we should be trying to learn is creating the slack space and making sure that ecosystem and the space for all parts of that ecosystem are built in, actually, to the new developments in the centre of London, because I think if the centre gives, we're in a lot of trouble.
We've all touched on the fact that the creative approach to providing space isn't just for the traditional creative industries anymore, that it's all corporates are now realising that's something that they need to buy into. Where does that leave us in terms of where next for the sort of work that you're all doing? You know, what is the next innovation? We've talked about WeWork and so on, but where, from your point of view, Jacob and Em and Emily, are you looking next?
I mean, I think in terms of kind of what the future of the office looks like, or location-wise, or both?
A bit of both.
I think on the location front, I think it's interesting to pick up on ideas of, you know, Margate's and Berlin's and Lisbon, all of which, in their own right, are very interesting places. I think one of the biggest ironies that I find is, you know, one of the big things that have dramatically changed the workplace is the advent of technology and communications tools and the cloud, which means actually no one really does physically need to be in the same place anymore to work. Working remotely has never been more easy and more accessible. Yet, if you look at every big major corporation or every young, interesting, super successful startup, the absolute unending focus on both of them is being part of a cluster and an ecosystem and a community. So I think, you know, location will continue to matter a huge amount, and I think, of course, there'll always be interesting creative offshoots in places like Margate and other, you know, secondary parts of the wider London southeast, or, you know, the north of England, all of which will attract, you know, more price sensitive creatives, and there'll always be interesting things happening there. But in terms of real density and kind of real established creative or corporate businesses, I don't think that really plays a threat. I think, just coming back to your earlier point, London does need to find a much more sustainable approach to providing housing for younger professionals at an affordable level. Because ultimately, I think a lot of businesses, even startups, find a way of sustainably remaining in office space, whether in central London or on the periphery. And with the tube network as it is, it's kind of sufficient. And I think there's enough of a there's enough flexibility within the market and enough of a range of different office spaces at different price points to sustain an ecosystem in the wider London area. But housing is a real detrimental issue. And if we can't find a medium-term solution to that, that really will what ultimately make London uncompetitive. And as talent begins to leave because they can't afford to live here, the corporates will ultimately follow them to another cluster, because that's what matters to them, you know, their talent. In terms of, you know, the office space of the future and kind of how things are changing, I think, you know, a move towards service-driven real estate, move towards agility and flexibility through co-working is definitely, you know, going to be a bigger and bigger component of the world of office space. But equally, I think there's a really interesting dichotomy that exists there as well. And actually, there was a bit of contradiction in what you were talking through, I think, because to the one hand, it's great to hear that Deloitte and other big traditional corporates have finally recognised that actually, if we're in the right sort of space and it's, you know, designed in the right way to foster collaboration, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, creativity, actually there's real, real, real tangible value to the business, and people are finally waking up to the value of that. So to me, I think as corporates begin to recognise that and understand it, to then say, but actually we're not going to take a long lease and we're going to go and work from a faceless WeWork and be another, you know, one of 200 businesses working in the same building in a kind of cookie-cutter box approach, actually doesn't provide that bespoke, unique, you know, space that's allowing businesses to kind of foster their own brand, create their own corporate culture, and do, you know, do all the things that are really attracting, you know, the best and brightest there. So
absolutely a great point.
I think there's a balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just on that point of technology, so this, you're absolutely right. I think we need to look at what the office is used for, right? And if you take it right back to where creativity came from, which was the coffee house culture in this country in the Industrial Revolution, where two things happened. Firstly, we stopped drinking alcohol and we started drinking tea and coffee, which meant that creativity increased a bit. But everyone started meeting together in these places, right? And that's kind of what we're seeing now, ironically, again, through a coffee culture. Office spaces need to be designed for that, less permanent working. So the agility is because we might scale down in London or we might scale up in London. We will always need the spaces, but the agility is something there. And then on the technology front, I'm sure you've heard the buzzword of distributed ledger technologies or the blockchain, right? A terrifying world. You don't need to understand what it is or how it works, but understand what it will do. It is distributed trust. So I will be able to transfer liability for a space or a building and ownership for that at the touch of a button. It will trust that I am who I am, I have the funds to do that, and I have the credit history or insurance to do that. I will be able to leave an office overnight and buy an office or lease an office overnight. What is that going to do to the agile model? It's absolutely terrifying. So ownership in every space is going to be thrown up in the air, and you're already starting to see that happen with currencies like